Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Joining us on the line now is James Geary. He's a New York Times best-selling author who's the former editor of the European edition of Time magazine. In his new book, The World in a Phrase, A Brief History of the Aphorism, James tells the story of the aphorism through some of its greatest practitioners, from the Buddha to Mark Twain, finally exploring how visual artists are mixing pithy language with compelling imagery and using social media to take the form into the future. Welcome to the show, James.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you with us. So this is a new edition of what was a big bestseller. How was it? When was it originally published?
It was published 20 years ago this month. Wow. And yeah, so it's the 20th anniversary edition. And when the book was published originally in 2005, Facebook existed, but Twitter didn't exist, and social media certainly didn't dominate our lives like it does today. So one of the motivations for bringing out this new edition was to bring in some of the things you mentioned in the introduction. People who are using social media to distribute aphorisms, people who are using visual imagery to make aphorisms, sometimes combined with text and sometimes just using images. And so this new edition, it contains everything the original book contained, but it has like 50% more added to it. And it's a chronological history. So there's new aphorists added throughout the history of the form, with a whole new chapter at the end devoted to contemporary aphorists and social media.
Great. So just take us back to basics for anyone listening who doesn't know what an aphorism is, just to explain it in simple terms, can you?
Yes. It's an odd term, and sometimes the word itself is unfamiliar, but once you explain it and give a few examples, it's clear. An aphorism is just a short, witty, philosophical saying. So you mentioned Mark Twain in the introduction, and he's one of the great American aphorists, and one of his aphorisms is, "I never let school interfere with my education." So aphorisms are kind of witty and often funny, and they have like a twist, either a kind of a play on words or a metaphor or some kind of psychological insight. So another great one, one of my favorites, is from a Polish aphorist who wrote during the 1950s, 60s, during the Soviet regime. And his name is Stanislaw Lec. And his aphorism is, "No snowflake in an avalanche ever feels responsible." and when you first hear that, it makes you chuckle like you just did. But it also seems nonsensical, right? What does he actually mean? It's an absurd statement. But then you think about it a bit, and it's a pretty devastating critique of groupthink, you know, whether that's in a totalitarian regime or a workplace. And that's why aphorisms are philosophical. They address kind of deep, important questions in our daily lives.
Yeah. So that's what would distinguish an aphorism from a quote by a famous person.
Yes. Right. A quote is just something somebody said. Mm. But an aphorism has that extra dimension of like philosophical or psychological insight. And also, it's a literary form. You know, the aphorism is a literary form, like writing a sonnet or writing a short story or writing a novel. There are people like Stanislaw Lec who deliberately composed aphorisms. That was their medium. And then there's other people whose were just kind of the aphorisms appear in other kinds of texts, whether it's poems or novels or essays or nonfiction. But yeah, there's a kind of literary element that distinguishes an aphorism from a quote.
And I suppose since the advent of social media, people are sharing aphorisms all the time on their accounts.
Yeah, they are. And so like Twitter, for example, is now known as X. Twitter has the word wit in it, and aphorisms are very witty, and you can find a lot of very witty aphorisms online. But of course, Twitter also has the word twit in it, and a lot of what happens online is anti-aphoristic. It's the opposite of aphorisms, like rage posts or, you know, knee-jerk political partisanship. Aphorisms make you think. They're kind of like, one way to think about them is like psychological circuit breakers. You know, they make you pause and maybe re-examine some opinions or some biases that you hold, and to think of things a little bit differently. And that is the opposite of a lot of the trolling and rage posting and hot takes that happen online. Another great example from Stanislav Lec, just the kind of political aphorism that I'm talking about, is his definition of politics is a Trojan horse race. And that is kind of, you know, that is a critique of all sides in a political debate. And that's what I mean when it kind of makes you stop, come up short, and think again about whatever assumptions you might have about politics or anything else.
I think also with social media now and people sharing aphorisms a lot online, they're probably bringing people throughout history to the forefront that maybe other people might not know. You know, that the guy that you've mentioned, for example, I'm not familiar with him, but hearing his quotes, it's the kind of thing that makes me think, oh, I want to look him up and find out more about him. You know, that would happen a lot, I guess, now.
Absolutely. And that's what I do on my social media feeds and my website. I write about and publish a lot of it is in the book, The World in a Phrase, but a lot I've just published online, like a recently discovered a contemporary Polish aphorist. Her name is Ursula Sobora. So she's currently writing aphorisms. And one of my favorites from her is, if the future had known what lay ahead, it would never have arrived.
particularly for now.
Exactly. And so that's a very contemporary aphorism, all the terrible things that are happening in the world. But I think another virtue of aphorisms, and like you just said, you get exposed to writers and aphorists you never would otherwise have heard of. But I think what Ursula's aphorism, it's funny, but it's funny in a kind of a dark way, you know? And I think that's the virtue of aphorisms. They acknowledge the dark side of human life, the dark side of human nature, the dark things that are happening in the world. But they also give you a little bit of humor. And I think that humor can give you the motivation and the strength to carry on, because, you know, that's what humor does. It's a kind of psychological release valve that gives us a kind of fresh wind and a fresh inspiration.
Yeah. I suppose with AI programs like ChatGPT, anybody could now be an aphorist, because they could put in the kind of subject that they want to have an aphorist about, and ChatGPT will do it for you, which is slightly depressing.
I would say it's incredibly depressing rather than slightly depressing. In fact, when ChatGPT first came out, ChatGPT and other forms of generative AI, they're trained on what's published on the internet, but they're also trained on pirated editions, that is, not legally purchased editions of books, including several of my books. And so I gave ChatGPT ChatGPT a prompt to write an aphorism in the style of James Geary. And it came back with something like, I'm paraphrasing it now, but in life's tapestry, metaphors are the threads that weave the story of our lives together. And that is a horrible aphorism. It is a really, really bad aphorism, but that is not the biggest problem with AI, in my opinion. It's not that AI writes bad aphorisms. AI can write really good aphorisms, and human beings, including myself, can write really bad aphorisms. It's not whether AI can write an aphorism better than I can. It's about what I alone, as an individual human being, could do. And I think what the danger with AI is that if we let it do our thinking for us, then our own thinking becomes kind of weaker and withered, and our critical thinking abilities just atrophy and kind of fade away. And I think one of the big dangers is AI is devoted to making things that are supposed to be difficult seem like they're easy. The chatbots that exist, and you can consult a chatbot about whatever's going on in your life, and it will come back to you with affirmations and encouragement and all that kind of stuff. But actually, things in life are sometimes meant to be hard. And that part of being a human being and part of growing as a human being is dealing with that stuff yourself and not kind of offloading it onto ChatGPT. That's when your own thinking, you're not thinking for yourself, you're just kind of following instructions. And I think aphorisms confront us, like I was saying earlier, aphorisms confront us with the difficulty, they acknowledge the difficulty, but they encourage us to deal with it ourselves. There's a great, one of my favorite aphorisms is from the British author G.K. Chesterton, and it speaks to this very, 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 very same point, I think. And it goes like this. In the struggle for existence, it is only on those who hang on for 10 minutes after all is hopeless that hope begins to dawn. And I find that, yeah, it's just so beautiful and it's so inspiring. And it also speaks to what we're talking about now, that yes, things can seem hopeless, but if you stick with it, then hope will begin to dawn and you'll be able to stand on your own two feet in addressing these kind of problems. Another one, Winston Churchill just popped into my head. When you're going through hell, keep going.
Yeah, very similar concept, isn't it?
Very, very similar. So aphorisms kind of confront you and they kind of increase your cognitive load. They don't decrease it like AI is supposed to do. But by increasing it, it kind of helps you find your way through and gives you that motivation and that inspiration to continue.
I expect there's a lot of people around the world who have aphorisms framed and hanging up in their houses to look at on a daily basis.
Oh my gosh. I am certainly one of those people. But it's true. And that also speaks to how ubiquitous and democratic in the small d kind of way. Aphorisms are often confused with this esoteric or elite form of literature. And it's true that 17th century French aristocrats are some of the greatest writers of aphorisms. But aphorisms are the oldest written art form on the planet. They go back to the very beginnings of writing 5,000 years ago. And they've always been a kind of common currency just among ordinary people. And every family, community has a little mini anthology of aphorisms that they carry around in their heads. In my family, my father, who was a man of few words, his favorite saying was always "little said, easily mended," and that's a kind of a truism, not the greatest parenting technique, I have to say, in all circumstances. But it was something that was kind of just passed on and something I always remember in my family. And I remember talking with one woman about aphorisms a couple of years ago. And she came up to me after a talk and was very excited to know if the saying that that had been shared from generation to generation in her family was an aphorism. And I said, well, tell me what it is, and I'll tell you if it's an aphorism. And the saying was, if you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much space. And I thought, wow, that is an aphorism and a great one. And what a great thing, you know, what a great piece of worldly wisdom to, you know, pass on from generation to generation. Yeah. So, yes, you're absolutely right. People, you know, have aphorisms framed. They're printed on pillows and postcards and greeting cards, bumper stickers, T-shirts. I saw one guy in a train, totally unrelated to aphorisms. He had a young teenager. A weekend wasted is not a wasted weekend, which I thought was a great philosophy for a teenager child.
Yeah. And how do you differentiate between an aphorism and a saying? You know, things like don't judge a book by its cover, or all these kind of sayings that we're brought up with. Are they sayings or aphorisms?
Well, there are five laws that I came up with to answer this very question, because there's all kinds of sayings. There's quotes, there's maxims, there's proverbs. And I think, so I tried to, in the book, define how you could tell an aphorism from these other kinds of sayings. So it must be short. It must be definitive. So it's not filled with lots of caveats. It must have an author. And that's what differentiates an aphorism from a proverb. So the one you just mentioned is a proverb, but only because we collectively no longer know who originally said it or right. wrote it. But if we did, it would be an aphorism. And then the fourth and fifth laws are it has to be philosophical, like we were talking about, and it has to have a twist, like we also mentioned, you know, some kind of psychological flip or literary twist or yeah. So those are the five laws, but like I was saying earlier, aphorisms they're artful, whether they're composed, you know, spontaneously in the moment, or if they're composed more deliberatively, you know, over a period of time, there's an artfulness about them that separates them from more kind of pedestrian sayings.
Yeah. So it's important to know who the author is then.
Yes. So, and a great example, like Shakespeare is responsible for so many expressions that we use in everyday language, just like some of them are aphorisms, how sharper than a serpent's tooth, you know, to be or not to be. Most people, a lot of people know that that's Shakespeare, but for a lot of the sayings, it's not. I didn't even know that that came originally from Shakespeare. Alexander Pope, the English 18th century English poet, is another example. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread, which is one of his great aphorisms. But imagine a day at some point in the future where the last person on earth who knows that that line is originally by Alexander Pope, that person passes away. Then that line will then change from an aphorism into a proverb.
Gosh, interesting. I've learned an awful lot today. Thank you very much, James.
Thank you so much for having me, Anna. It was a great pleasure to chat with you.
That's really interesting. Well, if people want to get a copy of The World in a Phrase, A Brief History of the Aphorism, it's available on our website, tre.radio, and it's by James Geary, who we've been chatting with today. James, thank you so much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds low after 35 gigabytes of network busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.